The explosive new film, Flynn, Deliver the Truth, Whatever the Cost, exposes secrets behind the government's takedown of General Michael Flynn.
Flynn knew what the intel world had been up to.
He ordered the first audit of the use of contractors. This set off alarm bells.
He told the truth. He was the most dangerous person for Donald Trump to hire. They had to get rid of Flynn.
Flynn, Deliver the Truth, Whatever the Cost. Available now. Watch it today. Go to SalemNow.com. SalemNow.com.
Morning, glory, America. Bonjour, hi, Canada. I'm Hugh Hewitt, and not inside the Beltway, live from the West Coast today as I continue my tour of the provinces. I want to welcome our new affiliate, because you can never welcome a new affiliate too often. If you're watching on the Salem News Channel in Delaware, Wilmington for many years, Wilmington, Delaware for many years, you can now listen on News Radio 1450 WILM in Wilmington, Delaware, and WDSD HD2, but you can also always watch on the Salem News Channel if you'd rather watch on the app before you leave for work. But I know some of you are getting in the car. Some of you are just waking up. You'll want to know the big story of the morning is that the Cavaliers won again last night, 95-93 over the New York Knicks. Now, those two stories are connected. The fella who persuades general managers across the country that they should pick up the Hugh Hewitt Show. There are three of them, and one of them is named Jim Bly. And Bly plies his trade from the Big Apple, and that's a sad, sad thing. He also is a legitimately good actor and appears in many films. But Jim is also the crier in the Roman Forum on behalf of the Hugh Hewitt Show, and he goes forth. And that's why we have 450-plus affiliates and rising every day when people like WILM, News Talk 1450, joins us from Wilmington, Delaware. But the thing he also does, he roots for the Knicks. So he got a lot of time to sell my show, a lot of time. But I wanted him to know that while he wasn't looking last night, Kevin Love, of all people, led the Cavaliers to a win, and they are now only a game and a half out of first place in the East. Which you would, if you had told me that Putin was about, pick a prediction a year ago. Putin is about to invade Ukraine, and Joe Biden has failed with the Omicron, or the Cleveland Cavaliers will be 1.5 games out of first place in the East, having, I don't know, they won 29 games already. I would have gone with the other two. Pick those two. Biden will fail and Putin will be at the border of Ukraine threatening to invade and start a huge in the middle of Europe war that no one saw coming. I would have picked that one over the Cavaliers being. But let me go to my headlines, the rundown. Lab study shows that Omicron blocking antibodies persist 4 months after a Pfizer biotech booster. Now, this raises the obvious question. OK, now that we know that. It's published on a preprint server Saturday. And so it's not yet officially FDA doctrine that the fourth booster works against Omicron for 4 months. But it will be soon. These preprints are pretty good. And then we're going to find out that everyone who had a booster more than 4 months ago is now going to become vulnerable to Omicron, which is everywhere. As Dr. Fauci said, eventually it's going to find you. As the WHO's head in Europe said, maybe Omicron is showing us that the endemic disease and we should just move on yesterday. Basically, smart people around the world are very quietly saying, we've done all that we can do, except we could develop new therapeutics. The masks don't really make any sense anymore because Omicron gets you. It just does. And this preprint shows that if you've had two vaccines and a booster, it'll get you, but it won't hurt you at all. You may not even notice that you have it. So that means fourth boosters are going to be in high demand soon. And of course, by the time people who've had the third booster start to get sick and die, old people, Team Biden will not yet have woken up to the fact that they need to authorize and distribute new free boosters. Although I can see it coming, and I'm just a talk show host who happens to have a PhD toxicologist brother-in-law. And so we talk about stuff like this. I would just encourage Team Biden to get out there and authorize the fourth booster ASAP so that people, when the ruling comes down 2 months late, that you need a fourth booster if you're over 60, that we can at least begin to, it's like their mask policy. They're 2 months late with the masks. They're 2 months late with the tests. They're 2 months late. They're always behind where they need to be. Now, I did notice that the new free N95 masks are showing up at a pharmacy near you today. And I thought, what a missed opportunity. Generalissimo, are you here this morning? Did you come in?
I'm here.
Okay. Do you remember 1976?
Do I remember 1976?
Yeah.
Yeah, I was about 10, yeah.
Yeah, and so I'm an adult in 1976, the bicentennial. And the year before, Gerry Ford, our beloved president, had an inflation problem.
Yeah.
Do you remember what he did to stop inflation?
What Gerry... No, I don't remember. I was 9 years old then. I don't remember what Gerry Ford did.
You do not remember the bold, decisive action that he did?
No.
It was a major television address. It was like a major prize received in Christmas Story.
Like the...
He distributed millions of buttons, wind buttons, red buttons with a little W, a white W, a white I, a white N, win.
Okay.
Button. And those buttons stood for whip inflation now. With the win buttons were part of Jerry. By the way, the program did not succeed in whipping inflation now. And I'm just thinking that Joe Biden missed a chance to print every one of those masks and get out there and just print every mask with W-I-N. Win masks. Could have been like win buttons. Now, if I were Peter Doocy, I would do whatever I could to find a win button today. And there've got to be some around D.C., and wear it every single day.
You know who would have probably had one of those? Is Jim Rogan.
Yes, absolutely. Jim Rogan would have a win button. Peter Doocy yesterday had a very interesting exchange with the president. So let's listen to that. Cut number one.
The only reason I don't like doing this is you never report on why I've called a meeting. And this is really important. I had a very, very, very good meeting, totally unanimity with all the European leaders. We'll talk about it later. Thank you.
Thank you.
That's a great asset. More inflation. What a stupid son of a bitch.
Okay, so Peter Doocy asks him if inflation is a liability in the upcoming election. And the now, how you characterize this is up to you. You can say he mutters, he grumbles, he seethed. Brian Stelter actually said he deadpanned. No, it's an asset. What a stupid SOB. And the hashtag SSOB is out there. But now that means, of course, that forever Peter Doocy is going to be asked about the SSOB moment. And I think if Peter comes back wearing a whip and play, so the question that triggered the SSOB response from the president was, is inflation going to be a liability in the election? And President Biden said, no, an asset. What a stupid SOB. Except he didn't say SOB. And our friend, Peter is a friend. His dad is a better friend. But I've met Peter before. Big Andrazi fan, by the way. So they made nice afterwards. I will play that for you coming up. But the RNC put out a montage to put a cap on the day as the president slowly, slowly, slowly disappears into a remake of Gran Torino. Cut number four.
Ask the right questions.
What a stupid son of a bitch.
Come on, man. That's like saying you, before you got in this program, if you take a test where you're taking cocaine or not, what do you think, huh? Are you a junkie?
What do you say?
Go back and read what I said.
Why? You're getting nervous, man.
That is an interesting reading of English. I assume you got in the journalism because you like to write.
I want to talk about happy things, man.
What?
What the hell? What do you do all the time? When did I say I was confident?
I said, let's get it straight.
I think I probably have a much higher IQ than you do, I suspect.
Well, that's not true. You're saying things you do not know what you're talking about. No one said that. Who said that?
Who said that?
I know you'd ask it. I have no response. It's another spirit campaign.
You don't understand that you're in your own business.
Can I ask you a quick question on Israel before you drive away?
No, you can't. Not unless you get in front of the car as I step on it.
She's going to
ask a number of obnoxious questions.
Don't screw around with me. Let's get it straight.
You didn't use a rape reference?
No, let me listen to me.
I'm listening.
Why do you always know those questions? So don't poke that in my face, okay, buddy?
You're a good man. Thank you guys.
Classic. Yeah, thank you, guys, you SSOBs. I'll be right back, but get a whip inflation now button, Peter Doocy, and wear it. Welcome back, America. I'm Hugh Hewitt, joined by David M. Drucker, who is no SSOB himself. David, good morning. How are you?
I'm good, Hugh, but I would be perfectly happy to be called one.
But you're not.
Good for my career.
You are a sartorial SOB, but you are not a stupid SOB. I mean, that is sartorially significant SOB. SSOB.
I like that.
Yeah, sartorially significant SOB. So you're an SSSOB, but we don't want them to get too close to the SSS stuff. David, I'm just about to tweet out, if I can figure out how to get it to the appropriate number of characters, the fact that this year is going to be lit in the Supreme Court. We're going to have Roe, race admissions, regulation of private property, the cases yesterday, religious freedom, and guns. I mean, this is the biggest Supreme Court term since Bush v. Gore, and that was only because of Bush v. Gore. Will it impact the 2022 elections?
Hard to say, right? Because you can look at this a number of ways. I mean, you could, and by the way, here I'm being really technical, so just bear with me. You could say Republicans are getting everything they ever wanted. They don't really need to be motivated, and Democrats have something to fight against, so this should motivate them. But, of course, from everything we've seen, and given that it's a midterm with Democrats in control of the White House and all of Washington, we already know what we're seeing, which is higher Republican enthusiasm and lower Democratic enthusiasm, and they're in a world of hurt. So it's not impacting the midterm elections in that way. But it could, in theory, particularly with Roe, help give Democrats an issue with which to motivate their base to show up and possibly turn some votes among suburban women that, let's say, might otherwise vote Republican or swing voters and swing toward where the winds are blowing in any particular year. So I don't really know, though, if it's going to have an impact, because everything we are seeing so far shows it to be a normal midterm year. Plus, meaning the party out of power is primed to do very well, primed to win back control of Congress and possibly in a really big way.
Now, that's what I think Democrats are thinking. They think that the loss of Roe, and Roe is going to be overturned. I don't know if it's going to be completely vanished, a new test, or if the court's going to do the smart thing and simply say, we're done, out of here, states, it's up to you. We made a mistake 49 years ago, and we are done with it. All of that, I don't think it becomes, that'll come out in June at the latest, late June, maybe the first week in July at the latest, Roe will be released. I don't think that's an issue compared to inflation, David. And if I am Jeff Roe, America's preeminent political consultant who just won Yunkin and is running races all over the country, if I'm Jeff Roe, are you telling your candidates that they're going to have to be smart about Roe?
I think you're telling your candidates to focus on the issues that voters most care about and what voters most care about. And by the way, I mean, this doesn't make Roe. Roe is the preeminent Republican consultant. I just had him on my Interim Shadow podcast.
Oh, did you really?
Yes, I did. And he was rather candid about a few topics.
Oh, Jeff will always tell you what he thinks. What he thinks.
Yeah,
absolutely.
And so he is very good, but it doesn't make him a genius to say that focus on what voters care about.
Can we get paid for telling people that? Can we go out there and open up a shop that says, you know, Drucker and Hewitt, focus
Drucker
on what
Hewitt,
voters
do what voters want.
Yeah.
Right now, that is inflation. Right now, depending on the cohort, that's COVID or another topic in the economy, or something to that effect. So I think that's what you do. And if in June and August and October voters still care mostly about inflation, that's what you talk about, and that's what's going to motivate them the most. It is possible, though, and I could see this, in some states, let's say, where you have a Democratic governor up for re-election, and you've got competitive congressional races, that voters go into the voting – female voters, let's say, go into the voting booth, suburban women, and say, you know, I'm really upset with Joe Biden and inflation, so check the box for the Republican. But, you know, our Democratic governor, maybe Governor Whitmer, somebody else, isn't so bad, and, you know, I'm really kind of concerned about – maybe Roe has now been overturned, or it might be overturned. I'm going to stick with her or him on the Democratic side in the governor's mansion to protect the, you know, it's now up to the states thing. So I could see voters making that calculation.
The number of voters that do that will be statistically insignificant. However, I do think that inflation will drive. And so if the Democrats get it under control, unlikely that will be a win for them. Last thing, David, I think, you know, I want to be the new Biden administration COVID czar, because the most obvious thing in the world is we're going to need a fourth booster. The effects of the third booster, first booster, third dose only lasts for 4 months, and old people are going to start dying from the Omicron as that wears off. Team Biden has never been ready, set, on your mark. I mean, they just are never caught awares. Do you think they'll get the boosters rolled out very soon, or are they going to make this their tests and mask fiasco triple crown?
You're asking me to, like, predict that the sun will go in the opposite direction. It's possible. I just don't know. I think they're caught in a bind between an American public that wants a more wholesome approach to the virus and a Democratic base that wants it to be pandemic forever, and that's a tough political spot.
That's where they are. They can appease the pandemic forever and the needs of public health by making the fourth vax available and not mandatory. Thank you, David M. Drucker. Coming up, Byron York in hour two of the Hugh Hewitt Show. Morning, glory, America. Bonjour, hi, Canada. Hugh Hewitt in January 25th in the year of our Lord 2022. I'm on the West Coast. Byron York of the Washington Examiner and Fox News joins us now. Good morning, Byron. Hello, Byron. Are you there?
Hello, you.
Good morning.
I'm here.
Before I go to the court, I want to ask you about this headline, because I love headlines sometimes. Over at the Wall Street Journal, one of my favorite headlines of all time: investors lose appetite for stocks of unprofitable companies. What do you think?
Well, actually, that makes sense, because there have been many companies over the years that not only were not making a profit, but had no real prospect of making a profit, that investors just ate up. And sometimes you would think, when are they going to figure this out? So it's not as crazy a headline as it sounds.
I know. I think it's a headline that the GameStop, AMC, Robinhood idiocies are over, and that if you're going to buy Bitcoin, be aware. Have you followed what happened to OBJ, Odell Beckham Jr., when he signed with the Rams?
I have not, but I'm waiting to be enlightened.
I will enlighten you now. He signed with the Rams for effectively $750,000 for the rest of the season after the Browns cut him. And he has to be paid in Bitcoin. So he was paid in Bitcoin. So the value of the Bitcoin that he got, first of all, on the $750,000, since it's in California, he owes about 50%. Given that it's in California, not Virginia, not Tennessee, not Florida, it's 13.5%, 14% income tax out here for that kind of money. So the $750,000 becomes $325,000, because he owes the tax at that. And the $325,000 has shrunk in half. So Odell's investment in Bitcoin, it's actually more than half from when he bought it, which I think was in November. Not the best thing to do, really, to buy Bitcoin. Byron, let's go to the court. I just asked your colleague, David Drucker. This is the Supreme Court term I have waited for 30 years of practice and 25 years of teaching. It is Roe v. Wade. It is race in the use of admissions. It is regulation of private property. It is religious liberty of football coaches to pray. It is gun regulations. Will it be a significant June-July for November? By that, I mean, will the Supreme Court decisions in these and other cases matter come November?
You know, I was thinking about that as I heard you and David talk about it. It is a kind of conservative conservatives' dream Supreme Court.
Yep.
But, you know, we had a new Fox News poll come out yesterday. And it got news mostly. It was the one that asked, it was a great question, which is, if the election were today, the 2024 election today, would you vote for Joe Biden or somebody else? And 60% said somebody else.
Wow.
36% said
wow.
Joe Biden. It was a clever question because it kind of brought in all sorts of opposition to Biden. I mean, when you say somebody else, you could mean Ron DeSantis, you could mean Donald Trump, or you could mean Bernie Sanders. But anyway, 60% said somebody else. But they also asked a couple of questions about the Supreme Court. Do you favor establishing a mandatory retirement age for Supreme Court justices? 69% say yes. And this is one that struck me. Do you favor increasing the number of justices on the Supreme Court? In other words, packing the court. And favor 46%, oppose 51%. That was pretty close.
That is pretty close.
And what it says to me, and by the way, the opposition to overturning Roe is pretty much where it's been, 2-1 in favor of not or opposed to overturning Roe. And this number about increasing the number of justices, that's up 11 points from last year. So what I'm suggesting is, if you do get these conservative dream decisions out of the Supreme Court, can Democrats make something of that, especially in the Senate races coming up in November? And my guess is they'll sure try.
Well, they'll try, but I think it's a briar patch. Throw us into that briar patch, because if you dig down in polling, 75% of Americans think abortion should be limited to the first 12 weeks, and near 90% oppose late-term abortion. And when people realize that where they live, abortions are still safe, legal, and very abundant, California and New York, they're not going to impact the red states. They are not in favor of the use of race in admissions, period. They do not like to regulate people's private property. They do not believe that religious liberty ought to be imposed upon, and people love their guns. So polling about the court is always, to me, a phantom. It just is always a phantom to me. A good candidate, and I was talking with David Drucker about Jeff Roe, a good candidate with good advisors will reframe those questions that you just asked from, do you favor the Supreme Court, to, do you really want the Democrats to pack the court, given what the court just did, which is return power to the people, allow you to keep your guns, stop discriminating on the basis of race to keep your kids out of college, stop taking your property, and stop imposing restrictions on your religion?
Well, I don't disagree that candidates should pay attention to issues that people care about, which is would be news to the Biden White House right now. On the other hand, in terms of firing up a Democratic base,
yes, it might.
Clearly the Democratic base, I think, has been deeply sort of troubled and lacking in energy since Donald Trump left the White House. And Democrats, I think, have been worried about how to fire up their base in a world where Trump is not the president. So, as you know, the issue of abortion is incredibly energizing. On the Democratic side, it feels sometimes like a sacrament, and all I'm saying is they're going to try it. But in terms of firing up their base, this is pretty strong. And also, the idea of packing the court is—it's an old idea in one sense, but becoming an actual policy option has a kind of a new feel to it. And I thought, again, 46-51. Favor, oppose, it's a pretty close result.
Yeah, they termed it expanding the court, not packing. We will see.
They didn't say packing the court, correct.
I want to turn to CDC for a second. The new study is that the booster for Pfizer lasts 4 months. And so basically admitting that the previous two injections wear off and that the third injection wears off. So older people are going to start dying from Omicron in higher numbers unless they get a fourth booster. It is that simple. So when do you think the team Biden will get around to authorizing a fourth booster? This is a poll. This is like an over-under. I'm just taking, I don't think it'll be until May after many people die, because they're never on top of this stuff.
Yeah,
what about,
say,
what do you think?
It's going to take them months. It's going to take them months to do it because it's taken them months to do everything. And this has, you know, back to polls, public approval of Biden's handling of COVID has been the single positive in his polling over the last several months. It's been kind of the tent pole holding up his job approval rating, keeping it in the 40s. And it's going down. It's definitely going down because not only can the public see that the president doesn't know what to do, they can see that he has absolutely no ideas, no new ideas to handle this. And biggest thing, he's not the man he said he was in the campaign. That is an experienced government official who could cut through the bureaucracy and get things done.
Agree, 100%. Are you on the panel, by the way, on Special Report tonight? Because I hope you are. I am.
Tonight? I don't think so. Are you?
Yeah, I am. I'm sorry. I like being on. Well, let me ask you about the president. I think he's gone full Gran Torino. That does not mean a loss. It doesn't mean dementia. It just means he's an angry old guy. Does the Ducey thing, Peter Ducey laughed it off. I laughed about it for endlessly. Anyone who's got a Trump tattoo loves their Trump tattoo, and I've got a couple of those. So now Ducey has a Biden tattoo, and I envy Peter Biden that tattoo. But what's it say about the president? It says nothing about Peter Ducey.
Well, to tell you the truth, in substance matters, it tells you he's worried about inflation. I mean, because he has this meeting about inflation. And then somebody asked him a question about Russia, and he says, you know, you always ask about something that's not the subject of the meeting. So Peter Ducey, who's an excellent reporter, says, well, hey, how about a question about inflation, which is what you want to talk about, right, Mr. President? So he says, is it going to be a political liability? And that's when Biden goes off on him, allegedly, because he thinks the mic is not on. But it shows, I think, that Biden is very worried about inflation. And his answer basically was, of course I'm worried about it. What do you think?
Yeah. It should have been completely handled differently. But he has gone full Gran Torino. And there's no getting away from that. Byron York, follow him at Twitter at Byron York. I'll watch you on Fox News. I'll read you in the Washington Examiner. Don't go anywhere, America. I'm Hugh Hewitt. Welcome back, America. It's Hugh Hewitt. So glad to have Charlie Dombeck back. Charlie is with Key City Capital, a great sponsor of our show. This is a sponsored segment, keycitycapital.com/Hugh. And the reason I wanted to talk to you, Charlie, is that market volatility this past 2 weeks has been extraordinary, especially with Bitcoin. And OBJ bought, took his salary in Bitcoin when he got traded to the Rams. It's decreased by, he has to pay 50% taxes on it to begin with. And then he put it all into Bitcoin very publicly. I know more about running a post route against the 49ers than OBJ knows about how Bitcoin works. What do you think of people who invest in stuff like Bitcoin?
Well, I think there's an opportunity in the asset class, but it's highly risky and it's highly volatile. And we've seen this volatility in the cryptocurrency markets historically. And I have always advised my clients, if you're going to participate in this asset class, it's play money. It's no more than 5% of your investable capital, and buyer beware.
And now, Charlie, I contrast it with the sort of investments that keycitycapital.com/Hugh makes available in rental apartment complexes in landlord-friendly states. Have those been affected much by the turbulence over the last 2 weeks?
Not at all. It's a very stable asset class. That portfolio will continue to perform regardless of the economic cycle because of the focus on workforce housing. And the volatility that we're seeing in the financial markets is something that you and I have talked about for 4 months since the inception of our relationship on your show. And I think we're only seeing the beginning of a trend. And I think this morning, although we saw a big recovery at the end of the day yesterday, many traders bought the dip. We're going to be off again today. The futures look to be down 4% or so early on in the morning. So I think investors need to be very defensive right now in passive investment real estate and lending are strategies that are going to perform in an inflationary environment. They're going to perform well during volatility. And then just think about it. On the preferred rate of return that you receive from our company, which is just one of three elements, you're going to earn an 8% rate of return. Compare that to 1% to 2% in your fixed income portfolio.
That's what right now overseas, which is the only market they ever tell people about because we have no idea what the American market is going to do at this hour of the day. That England, Germany, and France are all in the green. That means nothing. Our market is in for volatile days because the Fed is going to ratchet up interest rates for a long period of time. So if you don't like volatility, some people are fine with volatility. I am. I never sell stocks when they dip. I just don't. I think it's the dumbest thing in the world is to sell when people are selling. You should do the opposite. Warren Buffett said, you buy when people are afraid and you sell when people are too confident. And I believe in that. But I also believe a lot of people don't like it at all. They don't like roller coasters. And one of the investments you offer to investors is the opposite of a roller coaster. Am I correct?
You're absolutely right. And that asset class is going to continue to perform. We're seeing massive population shifts into Texas and Florida, southern states south of the Mason-Dixon line. And we've got a lot of runway left in these economies, at least 3 to 5 years. So you're going to continue to see appreciation, continue to see rent growth, and you're going to continue to see stable cash flows. So that those investments will be the top performing asset class over the next economic cycle.
Last question for you, and it came up this week. The Fetchy Mrs. Hewitt and I, our business account had a hack, and it's being investigated by the bank involved, and I'm not worried. It's FDIC insured. We'll get it back. How's your security at Key City Capital?
Well, all of our investor capital is managed by a third-party custodian that all they do is provide a custodial service to ensure the safety of our clients' investable capital, which means when you place capital in our funds, it actually goes to an escrow agent. And when we have a closing or a new acquisition, those funds actually go to the title agency or the attorney closing that deal, rather than to us individually. So there's a lot of security, a lot of internal controls, and a lot of safety measures that ensure the security of our clients' capital. And we have all of the security protocols in place necessary for investor reporting and maintenance and things like that.
I just want to tell people that because if they're calling up Key City Capital, you got to go to keycitycapital.com/Hugh to talk to Charlie or to find out one of his colleagues what they offer. And if you are looking for that fixed rate of return as opposed to volatile investment for the next 5 years, keycitycapital.com/you. But the one thing I didn't talk about when we got together in Washington, we discussed you becoming a sponsor of the show, Charlie, was security. And I just assume that now, big financials. But now my bank is a pretty sophisticated bank and it got hacked. What do you think about that? That's going to be increasingly a problem.
It's highly unusual, and I'm sorry you had an unfortunate event like that, but there are so many organizations out there that are attempting to hack all of our financial structures, our credit cards, our bank accounts, and we have to take every measure possible to protect ourselves.
100%. Charlie Dombeck is the guy you want to talk to. KeyCityCapital.com/you. Don't buy Bitcoin, people. Don't be dummies. If you don't understand it, don't buy it. I understand apartments and demand from people who are going to go to work every day in landlord-friendly states. That's what KeyCityCapital.com does. Great sponsor of this show. Give them a call. KeyCityCapital.com/you and come right back for hour three of the Hugh Hewitt Show. I want to remind you that our sponsor is AndrewandTodd.com. There with Sierra Pacific, they lend you money to refinance your house or buy a home or help your son or daughter become investors in real estate by becoming a non-occupying co-borrower. They help senior citizens with reverse mortgage. They help veterans with no money down mortgages. They help you refinance. So if you need to get money out of your house or you need a whole new house, go to AndrewandTodd.com or call them at 888-1172. Morning, Glory America. Bonjour, hi, Canada. Hugh Hewitt on the West Coast this morning. But inside the Beltway is Senator Roger Wicker from the great state of Mississippi. He joins me now live. Good morning, Senator. How are you?
Well, Hugh, I am calling you from the Gulf Coast of Mississippi. I'm looking out my window on the Mississippi Sound and our beautiful but rainy Gulf of Mexico.
Oh, well, I'm glad that you are still far from the Beltway then. My compliments to you, Senator. Senator, I have a group of, I got a friend in a group of 10 retired military analysts who are following everything that Putin does. He tells me this morning that Putin has begun to amass ammunition in depots, separate some of his forces from their formations, this creation of a logistic hub and a reserve force is a precursor for action, but no field hospitals yet. And when those go up, the Russians go in. What's your assessment?
Well, my assessment would be to listen to people that know what they're talking about. My assessment also is that this shouldn't be a surprise to anybody. And it also helps when I can quote Democrats who don't have a partisan axe to grind. Leon Panetta, former Democratic congressman from California, former Secretary of Defense under the Obama administration, said everything this president has done has shown a sign of weakness. So starting from Afghanistan, from our military budgets, from the fact that we don't yet have a continuing resolution, we don't yet have our appropriation bills done for next year, means we are not taking the defense of our country and the defense of our Western values seriously. So it's not surprising that people who know the tactical angles of movements would make that very conclusion.
Now, I am urging Team Biden to send land-to-sea missiles ASAP to Ukraine, because the Russians are sending their ships down around Crimea into the near Ukraine and Crimea. Have we done anything, to your knowledge, to put cruise missiles in the hands of the Ukrainians?
Not that I can tell you anything about. No, but we you know, there's a reluctance to put troops in. The thing I've always been saying is, I think we hurt ourselves when we rule things out, and that we just never have from the Eisenhower administration going forward said that we absolutely will not do this, we absolutely will not do that. I think one thing that we ought to say is possible is that we could fire on Russian aggressors from ships in the Black Sea. And we don't say we're going to do that, but we say that is something that is a response that is reasonable. It wouldn't involve troops on the ground, but it would certainly help preserve the values of freedom and open elections and self-determination and border integrity of all of our friends in Europe. So,
do we have any ships in the Black Sea, Senator Wicker?
We do have ships in the Black Sea.
Okay, so I'm glad to know that. Now, my question is, though, when Putin sent his little green men over the hill in Syria, American forces made short work of them. Not one soldier was a combat fatality. Some may have been injured. Every Russian who came over the hill is dead. And that was an unfortunate test of American capacity. Ukrainian capacity will not be American capacity, but do you think they're goners if Russia invades?
I think Russia will have a good week of it, and then they will really regret why they ever got involved in this quagmire. They have the weaponry, the overwhelming massive superpower weaponry to overwhelm a small neighboring country, and they have the compliance of Belarus, whose president is pretty much a vassal now of Vladimir Putin. And so there are troops amassing on the northern border now of Ukraine, southern part of Belarus. They are dangerously close to Poland, and NATO and the Western alliance should be concerned about that.
Now, the president has mobilized or put on notice 8,500 troops. I believe they include the 82nd Airborne. But we haven't sent anyone. And we haven't sent anyone anywhere, have we?
Not as of yesterday, and I haven't seen anything on the news programs this morning that he has sent anybody. But let's at least be heartened about the fact that the President of the United States has apparently taken the advice of some people in the Pentagon that at least we need to be moving some folks over there.
My question to you then, Senator, is what do they listen to? President Biden and his minor incursion fiasco press conference has now been under a hail of criticism for a full 6 days. That was Wednesday of last week. It's Tuesday of this week. Does he care? Does he listen to anything? Or is it just your old friend and colleague in the Senate doing what he's always done, which is making it up as he goes along?
Well, they listen to actions and they see what happened in Afghanistan. And that was a huge sign of not only ineptness, but weakness at the same time. They also see a Washington, D.C. government that since October 1st can't seem to get a Defense Department appropriation bill done. I would call on Chuck Schumer and Nancy Pelosi this very day to say the first order of business when we get back to Washington, D.C. next Monday is we don't have to do the whole continuing resolution appropriation. But with regard to the Defense Department, we're not going to be playing under the pattern set a year and a half ago by appropriators. We're going to pass a brand new defense appropriation bill that's now 6 months overdue, five months overdue, and get that done in a week. That would be the best sign the U.S. Congress independently could make. And we're going to update to the forces needed for that one department. And we have to muddle along with a continuing resolution and talk about the Hyde Amendment and things like that that Democrats don't like. For another several weeks, then we can live with that. But we ought to be passing our delayed, tardy defense appropriation bill Monday or Tuesday when Congress reconvenes in Washington, D.C.
I am astonished that that has not yet passed, Senator Wicker. Let me ask you, your colleague John Cornyn came on the show last week and suggested a lend-lease-like approach for Ukraine. Does that have any chance of getting through the body and then going to the House?
I think it does. And I commend John Cornyn for his inventiveness there. And really, here's what should happen. The President of the United States, having been advised that people like Bob Menendez on the Democratic side, like Gene Shaheen on the Democratic side, would join in on something like that, should call for that. That ought to be a presidential request that the Congress act quickly on that as a show of national unity, as a show of resolve. You know, it was a way that we got around the America Firsters and pacifists in the late 30s when a seemingly loud portion of Americans did not want to get involved to fight the Nazis. We did the Lend-Lease program. We could already do a lot of that, but a piece of legislation passed by, say, 90 bipartisan senators, an overwhelming majority of House members, signed by the president, called for by the president, would be one way that we could send a message that we are taking this seriously. And that for the first time in Vladimir Putin's life, we are going to respond in a way that hurts him a lot. I've said it so many times, people may be tired of hearing it. He's the neighborhood bully, and no one has ever given him a bloody nose. He got away with Crimea. He's getting away with eastern Ukraine. The same with Moldova,
Georgia,
Georgia, the Republic of Georgia, as far back as 2008. and he's seemingly gotten his way every single time.
Except in Syria, when he took on American forces directly, and Trump's order, rules of engagement allowed the United States to wipe them out. I like your idea about our ships in the Black Sea, Senator. I'll bring it up with Senator Cotton. Roger Wicker of Mississippi, thank you for joining me, member of Senate Armed Services. Don't go anywhere, America. I'm Hugh Hewitt. Welcome back, America. I'm Hugh Hewitt, joined now by Arkansas United States Senator Tom Cotton. Good morning, Senator Cotton. How are you?
I'm good, Hugh. Hope you're well. Good morning to you and all your listeners.
I am now in many mock drafts. Arkansas receiver Treylon Burks, the 6'3", 225-pound giant, is going to the Browns in a mock draft. I assume that will make you a Browns fan, Senator?
Well, that'll be a good get for y'all, and we always love to see the Razorback players going on to play in the NFL.
We got all of Texas rooting for Cleveland now, so I'm hoping that with Baker and Miles, so I'm hoping to bring you into the fold. Senator, I have a touchy question. You've been a guest on this show regularly since 2011, before you even entered the House of Representatives. So I guess you've been on like 500 times, and you've had to talk to Dwayne every time you've called in. So I'm just wondering if there's anything you'd like to say to Dwayne, like the president said to Peter Ducey yesterday.
No, Hugh, I would reserve that only for you when I'm talking about you to Dwayne.
Do you want to clear the air about it? I mean, I don't want you to be caught on a hot mic. I want you to do so purposefully. I'm told that Army veterans have rather colorful language. Navy people are very virtuous in their speech, but then Army veterans can have an array of terms that they would use about Dwayne.
Well, sometimes I've been asked that question, and I'll say that you can't expect the T-Rex to have table manners, you.
Okay. Hey!
Oh, I was talking about soldiers, not about Dwayne.
Oh, wow. Well, okay, that's good, because Dwayne doesn't have table manners either. You notice what he took offense to. He took offense. Senator, let's get serious. According to a group of 10 serious people who have a chat room, Putin has established supply depots, which is the penultimate step to invasion, the last step being the establishment of field hospitals. Do you expect the invasion of Ukraine to occur soon?
Hugh, I'll put it this way. Every indicator we have suggests that Putin is building up these troops, not as a feint, not as a demonstration, not as leverage, but because he plans to go for the jugular. He plans to invade Ukraine, probably all the way up to Kyiv in the middle of the country, across the Dnieper River, and take the entire Black Sea coast all the way down to Odessa, linking up with Transnistria, a breakaway section of Moldova that Russia has long supported. Maybe that won't happen, but every indicator suggests that it will happen.
What should the United States do when hostilities begin, and what should we be doing right now?
Hugh, let me take a step back, if I can, to talk to you and your audience about why I think we got here, because I think it informs what we should do.
Please.
Why has Vladimir Putin stationed 135,000 troops on Ukraine's border? What he has been saying the last 2 months is a pretext. It's red herrings. He says that he cannot tolerate Ukraine in NATO. Well, Ukraine's not in NATO. Ukraine doesn't have a plan to join NATO. No NATO leaders have said they want Ukraine in NATO. In any kind of immediate or medium-term fashion. He said he can't tolerate large-scale military exercise in Ukraine. Well, we don't have large-scale military exercise in Ukraine. It's not like what we do in our NATO allies, such as Poland. We have a few advisors there from time to time, but we have those in countries around the world. Those are all red herrings. The real reasons that Vladimir Putin has postured these troops in Ukraine is that he wants to reassemble the greater Russian Empire, not just back from the Soviet Russia days, but all the way back to the Tsarist days. And there cannot be a Russian empire without Ukraine in Vladimir Putin's mind. Second, he wants a ring of non-democratic states surrounding Russia as buffers. And third, he does not want anything like democratic or representative government in Slavic lands like Ukraine or Belarus. The reason for that is he doesn't want his own people to look towards a democratic government in a place like Belarus or Ukraine and think, well, gosh, if it works there for them, it should work for us here in Russia. Those are the main reasons that Vladimir Putin is doing this. But Hugh, those reasons have been the case forever. Vladimir Putin has always wanted to reassemble Greater Russia. He's always wanted a buffer zone. He's always worried about democratic movements in Russia. So what is it now that has caused him to move? Well, there are some factors that are not related to the United States, like the new coalition government in Germany or the president of France's reelection campaign coming up. But at root, it's that Joe Biden has appeased Vladimir Putin for a year. He's made him think he can get away with it. First thing he did when he came into office was a no-strings-attached extension of a badly one-sided nuclear arms control treaty for Russia. Vladimir Putin's number one priority, something that Donald Trump refused to do. Then he waived sanctions on the Nord Stream 2 gas pipeline into Germany, which was Vladimir Putin's second highest foreign policy priority. He basically looked the other way when Russia either sanctioned or at least didn't object to the colonial pipeline hack. And then, of course, Vladimir Putin saw, like the rest of the world, the debacle in Afghanistan in August. So Joe Biden's weakness and appeasement over the last year is in no small part the reason Vladimir Putin has chosen now, not last year, not 5 years ago, or any other time, to go for the jugular. And I think the lesson from that is we need to be much tougher right now. We need to make sure that the Ukrainian army has the weapon it needs to defend itself. We should impose sanctions on the Nord Stream 2 pipeline right now. We should be very clear about the kind of sanctions that Russia would face if they invade Ukraine, cutting them off from the international banking system, sanctioning their oil and gas and their minerals and mining industries. These all have to be very clear right now, because the only thing that Vladimir Putin will respond to is strength and toughness. He will not respond to appeasement and conciliation. That's what actually has gotten us to where we are.
Now, Senator, when Donald Trump had rules of engagement in Syria and little green Russian men came over the hill, they were all killed. And American troops did that, and it did not lead to a international confrontation, because Putin simply, the blade hit steel and he withdrew. My question is, should American forces be involved in any way in responding to a Russian attack, whether it is from sea or by air, or from CIA paramilitaries on the ground? If Putin rolls into Russia, do you rule anything out?
Hugh, we do not have a military alliance with Ukraine the way we do with NATO partners like Poland or the Baltic states. And at this point, I think it's too late to be deploying troops to Ukraine to try to deter Vladimir Putin. However, we need to ensure that our European partners are doing everything they can to help shore up NATO's eastern flank, just as we need to cooperate with those partners to provide as much weaponry to the Ukrainian army as we can to help protect their own territory. Now, if Vladimir Putin takes steps like trying to close the Black Sea to American naval vessels, or tries to interfere with the free flow of international air travel, that's a horse of a different color.
Well, let me stay on Ukraine for a second, though, Senator. Ukraine's only hope may be asymmetrical response. Have we given them the means of an asymmetrical response? For example, a land-to-sea cruise missile that will threaten the Russian fleet, because that inflicts costs that Vladimir Putin may be unwilling to absorb.
Hugh, I don't want to speak specifically about the kind of weapons we may have provided. There's been a lot of public reports about what we have provided and what other NATO nations have provided. I will tell you a story, though, about the time I was in Ukraine. This was in the middle of 2015. John McCain and I went to Dnipropetrovsk, as it was then called. We met with a lot of Ukrainian soldiers, in some cases volunteer militiamen, who were just back from the Eastern Front fighting the Russian troops in the Donbas region. And we met a burly battalion commander. He'd been a young lieutenant commanding a tank platoon in the last days of the Red Army. And he said to us, Mr. Senators, we do not need 100 Javelin missiles to blow up 100 Russian tanks. We only need one Javelin missile to blow up one Russian tank. His point being that Vladimir Putin was invading Ukraine then, in part because he thought he could get away with it. And when he first took casualties, it would prevent or present him with a whole new cost calculus, and it would strike fear in the heart of every one of those other tanks. So the weapons that we provide are not necessarily going to help the Ukrainian army defeat the Red Army, but it severely alters their cost-benefit calculus and hopefully will cause Vladimir Putin to back down. I mean, the ultimate result we want here is a peaceable outcome in which concessions are not granted to Russia, but rather American and Western strength deters Vladimir Putin.
Do you know, Senator Cotton, we've talked about Putin's assets and his oligarchs' assets before. This week, or last week, actually, one of our business accounts got blinked out a significant sum of money. Someone just hacked into the bank and took money. We'll get it back. I'm not worried about that. But it certainly is a message that to, you know, take banking very seriously. Should we not be doing the same thing as a deterrent for Putin right now? I mean, now, not after he invades, but right now going in and blinking out some of his money and his oligarchs' money.
Yes, Hugh. In fact, I've long argued that we should be more aggressive in trying to expose and seize the ill-gotten gains of the class of oligarchs who both benefit from and prop up Vladimir Putin's rule. We can also take steps to expose the crimes they have committed against the Russian people by looting and pilfering the Russian state.
Okay, my last question. Has anything about the Biden response been other than hapless? And that is a very intentional term. They are simply hapless. They do not appear to know what they're doing, Senator.
It's hard to think of anything, Hugh. Even when they're taking the right steps now, those right steps tend to be half measures, and they're certainly much too late. You know, the time to deter Vladimir Putin was not when he added the 130,000 troops to the border of Ukraine. It was 3 months ago before he started this buildup. More to the point, it was a year ago when Joe Biden came into office acting like so many other Democrats had for 4 years, like a latter-day Jack Ryan from a Tom Clancy novel, beating their chest about standing up to Russia. But as soon as Joe Biden took office, he reverted back to his old, dovish Cold War ways. You know, isn't it telling you that the last time a Democratic president was in the White House, Vladimir Putin invaded Ukraine? Now a Democratic president is in the White House. It appears that Vladimir Putin is preparing to invade Ukraine. But for 4 years, when Donald Trump was in the White House and the Democrats were screaming, Russia, 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 surprisingly, Vladimir Putin did not invade Ukraine. That should tell you how you approach Russia and Vladimir Putin from a position of strength and deterrence. You mentioned the killing of all those Russian paramilitaries in Syria. Remember, too, that Donald Trump killed Qasem Soleimani, somewhat out of the blue. There was not a big buildup. We got a shot, and we took it, as we should have. Or when Xi Jinping was eating chocolate cake at dessert at their summit in Mar-a-Lago, and Donald Trump looked at him and said, I just ordered airstrikes in Syria. That's just the kind of thing that Ronald Reagan did as well. We have to confront our adversaries from a position of strength to deter their aggression. Any kind of appeasement or conciliation simply rewards them and encourages more aggression.
Senator Cotton, thank you. I know they listen. I hope they heard, and I hope they do it. Senator Tom Cotton, thank you. I'll be right back with Josh Kroshaw, America. Welcome back, America. I'm Hugh Hewitt. Join me on Special Report. Tonight I'll be on the panel with Brett Baer at 6 p.m. in the East. I'm joined now by Hotline Josh, Josh Kroshaw. You can find Josh on Twitter at Hotline Josh, and you should be reading everything Josh does. Josh, did you see yesterday that a critic of talk radio, who's a friend of mine, Brian Rosenwald, said that Ted Cruz is a danger for the Republican Dave McCormick to bring to Pennsylvania? That's about the dumbest thing I've ever seen Brian tweet. Do they not understand primaries and Ted Cruz's value in a primary?
Yeah, I mean, I like Brian. I talk to him on Twitter quite a bit, but I think he may have not appreciated the value of a Cruz endorsement in a Republican Party primary that's wide open, where you have Dave McCormick, who you know, a lot of conservatives, a lot of folks caring about winning that Pennsylvania Senate seat on the Republican side, you know, are focused on it. And they want to make sure he has the conservative cred in the primary. There's some questions, you know, he's a hedge fund guy. There's some questions about his commitment to conservatism, and having the Cruz endorsement gives him a big ally on that front.
You see, what you just articulated is the key thing. Ted Cruz was the runner-up. He and Trump have repaired relations, and runner-ups usually get the baton the second time they run. I mean, that's almost like in the muscle memory of the Republican Party, is that whoever finished second last time gets to get the baton this time. I'm not sure if the old rules apply in the new world, but Ted Cruz was Glenn Youngkin's secret weapon in Virginia, wasn't he, in the primary?
For the nomination. I mean, that's the key distinction. I'm not sure if McCormick wins the nomination, whether Cruz is going to be. I'd be a little skeptical that he's going to bring in Cruz for the general election, but in a primary, and it's going to be a really, really competitive, hotly contested primary in Pennsylvania, having a Cruz endorsement really separates you from the pack. It gives you some credibility with conservative voters, and that's the type of voters that McCormick needs to win that race against Dr. Oz and a couple other candidates out there.
Now, again, Carla Sands and Bartos, Jeff Bartos. Again, I think Brian's a good guy, but he lives in the blue bubble. Now I want to go to the blue bubble generally. My theory is that the blue bubble people inside the Beltway, especially those in the media, have no idea what parents think about masks on their kids and quarantine rules. Do you think I'm right?
There is a blue bubble. Even within blue Northern Virginia, there's a growing number of parents. I'd argue there's a majority of parents that want a timetable for when the masks are going to come off. I think there are some folks who are saying, let this Omicron wave burn out in the next week or two, and then we need to know when you're going to phase out these restrictions. And so, you know, I think I told you on the show last week, that you know, I think Youngkin may have jumped the gun a tad bit because he's getting these court fights with these counties. But the news that no one's reporting on in Virginia is that the Democratic state senator in Fairfax County, Chap Peterson, he's like the Joe Manchin of Virginia, came out and basically said he agrees with Glenn Youngkin, and he's the decisive vote.
Yep.
He's the guy. If he flips, the Republicans essentially control the state or control the vote in the state Senate. And that he's saying he's going to basically, if the courts, you know, foul this up, there's going to be a law that Youngkin's going to push through the local legislature, and he has the support of one of the most important Democrats.
Yeah, masks are done for in Virginia. Schools are done for. Okay, last and very quick question about President Biden calling Peter Ducey an SSOB yesterday. What's the, you know, the conservative media is laughing about it. I've got more Trump tattoos than almost anybody. So it's, you know, if they like you, as Adam Clymer said about George W. Bush calling him a funny name, if they like you, you're not doing your job. But we laugh about it. What do you think is the takeaway from that exchange?
You know, I think it goes beyond just, I mean, Peter took it in good humor. But he also just this past week went after Fox's other White House correspondent, Jackie Heinrich, one of the top White House reporters out there, for asking actually a really important question about the policy towards Russia and Ukraine. And, you know, I think this is a Fox thing for Biden. I think he's got it in his head that, you know, Fox has it. The reason his poll numbers are bad is that he's getting tough coverage from Fox. It's ridiculous. I think that's absurd. But when you live in a liberal bubble, sometimes sometimes reality doesn't come first nature. And,
right.
I don't think it's a coincidence that he's kind of blown up at the two Fox White House reporters in the last few days as things have gotten really tough.
Last question, Josh. The over-under date for when Team Biden gets around to authorizing a second booster, a fourth dose, because the science clearly shows that old people are going to need it. They were late on the masks being available. They were late on the tests. They're already late on the fourth booster or the fourth shot. What's your over-under on the date when we actually get people who want, no mandatory, people who want to get a fourth booster, second booster, a fourth shot can get one?
Yeah, it's a good question, Hugh. I mean, I know Israel has begun sort of the fourth booster. I'm not sure if it's had the same positive effects that the third booster has. So I think it'll take some time because the FDA has been generally, the CDC and the FDA both have been fairly cautious about wanting to see the data before, you know, going forward with another boost. And they were cautious, I think, to an unhealthy degree in approving the third dose, the booster. But, you know, I think it'll be at least a couple months. And I think the bigger development is going to be sort of an Omicron vaccine, one that kind of deals with not just Omicron, but other variants going forward.
You know, to me, Josh, they are stupid as can be for not authorizing a fourth shot, a second. But for anyone who wants it, not mandatory, because people want it. And Team Biden, who is late on the mask, late on the test, is going to be late on the booster as well, because they're just incompetent. They are just simply incompetent. This is stuff that Trump didn't have, or he would have made it available, like the Right to Choose Act. Josh Krosshauer, Hotline Josh, thank you, my friends. I'll be on Special Report tonight, America. Tune in at 6 on the Fox News Channel. I'm Hugh Hewitt. Talk to you tomorrow.
Three
three-star general, Michael J. Flynn, head of the Pentagon Intelligence Agency, knew all the government's dirty secrets.
He was one of the most respected generals in the military.
Flynn knew what the intel world had been up to. He understood its funding.
He ordered the first audit of the use of contractors. This set off alarm bells.
The explosive new documentary, Flynn, Deliver the Truth, Whatever the Cost, and covers the facts behind this scandal.
Flynn told the truth. He was the most dangerous person for Donald Trump to hire.
I find out the worst enemy that I'm going to face in my life is right here in America. They took my assessment and they wanted me to change it. And I was like, I'm not changing it.
They had to get rid of Flynn.
With in-depth interviews, archival footage, and never-before-seen personal records of the man behind the headlines.
I just felt like I was drowning.
Flynn, Deliver the Truth, Whatever the Cost. Available now. Watch it today. Go to SalemNow.com. SalemNow.com.